This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 16th day of November 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'll remind you, of course, to pick up your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference just a day and a week away. That's next Tuesday, 800-898-1065 or farmassetsconference.com. We'll take a look at the cash grain market, of course, with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. And the weather forecast, too, with guys at Brisk Pulse. They're out of Chicago, Illinois. And we'll do it all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. December contract up a penny and three quarters in the corn pit at $3.60. The March at 3.66 and three quarters, up one and a quarter. The May up a penny at 3.72 and three quarters. July finished 3.78 and a quarter, up one and a quarter. And next year's December, $3.89 and a half, a penny and three quarters higher. Soy complex, January beans up four and a quarter, $8.59 and a half. The March at 8.60 and three quarters, up four and a half. The May at 8.66 and a half, 4.5 higher. July up 4.5 as well, 8.72 and three quarters the trade. November finished at $8.79 and a half in the soybean pit, up 5.5 cents. Bean meal in the December contract unchanged at 288.80, and the bean oil for the day at 27.29, up 25 cents. Soft red winter wheat finished the December down a penny and three quarters at $4.94. July at $5.75 down a penny and three quarters. The hard red July at $5.25, up a half cent for the afternoon. Live cattle futures are currently trading locked, the limit lower, down $3, as is most of the nearby. December contract at 127.67 and a half. Feeder cattle now down $2.47 and a half in the November's. January, the lead option really down $4.50. That's the limit there at $160 and a nickel for the day. Lean hogs December contract $3 lower on the afternoon. They're trading at $51.80, and the February also locked down the limit at $54 and a nickel. Have you purchased your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference yet? If not, do it right now. Take the time and dial this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Or go to our website at willag.org. Just for $30 next Tuesday, you can be in one of the best conferences, I promise, that you'll have all winter long.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community, and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Outside markets are higher at this hour. Crude oil up $1.16 a barrel. It's trading at $41.90. Ethanol futures at $1.46 and a half, up a penny and 2 cents. And the price of gasoline, while still very low, is about 0.4 cents higher at $1.24 and 0.3 cents. December heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.39 and a tenth. That's a penny higher. And natural gas for the day at $2.38 and 3 cents is up 2 and 2 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial average 169 points higher at 17,376. The U.S. dollar at 99.54, that's up 0.448. And gold futures on the afternoon at $1,081.50. They're up 60 cents for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Showers are likely. That'll come right now with a high of 55, southeast winds, at about 15 miles an hour, gusting to 22 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation is set at 90% for this evening and 70% for this afternoon. And then there is a 47-degree low for the night. Tuesday showers, the rain could be heavy at times, a high of 62. Tuesday night showers, a low of 56, 100% chance that it will rain on Tuesday evening. And during the day, Tuesday, 100% chance as well, 50% chance on Wednesday, mostly cloudy and a high near 58 degrees. We'll take a more detailed look at the weather forecast with the guys at Brisk Pulse. They're in Chicago, Illinois. That at the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Well, this is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 16th day of November, just a week away from the Farm Assets Conference. That'll be in Bloomington Normal at the Conference Center, Marriott Hotel there, just off the ISU campus in Normal, Illinois. Tickets are just $30. If you haven't picked it up yet, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Or you can buy it online at farmassetsconference.com, willag.org. Kurt Kimmel now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day at the CME Group. Kurt, I think I want to start not in the grains, but rather in the livestock, because they had another tough day there, especially for both the cattle and the hogs. What happened?
Yeah, I think it's a little concerned about the world events over the weekend. You know, when you have terrorists start targeting, you know, restaurants and nightclubs and so forth, it kind of puts a fear into maybe we could lose a little bit of demand of people going out to eat. It's not only here in the U.S., but, you know, particularly, you know, Paris, France, or wherever these targets, you know, are going to occur down the road in through here. So I think that was a little bit a part of it. And then also, too, in the hogs, we're seeing and we're still killing over 8%. More hogs versus a year ago. A little concerns about maybe a little heavier weight. If we're going to see some type of bounce in the hogs, it usually occurs right after Thanksgiving for Christmas ham demand. So as far as buyers go, hopefully we'll see some bargain hunters start to come in here as we move into midweek trade to buy it in advance of that. Then the beef complex, we're just totally seeing non-interest at the moment in through here. For those wanting to, you know, talk to the strength or the weakness of the dollar, there's ideas maybe we could lose a little of this export business on the beef side of the equation. And then lastly, in the beef, just didn't really see a whole lot of buying interest on, you know, weather concerns in parts of the U.S. either. So main thing is kind of watch the news here as we go through the week and see if we can't, like I say, find some bargain hunters in through here to sort of step in through here and get some coverage on here on this price break.
On the grains and oilseeds side, shall we start with the soybeans? They had a 4 to 5 cent gain for the day.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, we sold 180,000 tons of beans to China, just kind of routine. You know, we're picking up the slack in through here. We need to see this amount daily in through here in order to get the purchases on and get those rascals shipped out of here by, you know, first part of March before they start to totally focus to the southern hemisphere. You know, China's, you know, our main buyer, so we'll continue to watch that. They are making up some ground, so it's a little better than what it looked like last summer. Crush came out a little less than expected, 158.9. Ideas were a little over 160. But, you know, as long as we can maintain these strong crush numbers, you know, that's going to be helpful there. Then lastly, in the beans, we saw, fundamentally wise, we saw maybe just a little reduced precip forecast for portions of the southern hemisphere. Nothing major. You know, they're going to play that forecast back and forth. That was enough to give the market a little bit of buying interest. Technically, we kind of held the lows we made last week. We traded lower, closed higher, so we got a little reversal going. The main excitement technically would be in the January beans, watching the highs we made late last week around this 865 area. There's going to be some buy stops start to build in through there. So if we can move above that level and stay above that level, maybe we'll see the funds be a little bit, trading funds be a little bit more aggressive on the buy side in the beans there.
What do you see on the technical picture for the corn?
Well, kind of like the beans, not too bad of a day. We came in here and kind of tested last week's lows, made new low by a little bit, came back and closed higher. The key there will be this 371 area in the March. If we can pop that out, maybe we can get something a little bit more serious going. Cycle-wise, you know, we're a little early, but we're due for another low end through here. So, you know, as long as we can see producers kind of hang on to this stuff and bases stay firm, maybe this fund will get a little nervous being short going into the end of the month and through here.
Anything else we ought to discuss before I let you go for the afternoon?
No, I just can't believe it's almost Thanksgiving already. But for the most part, I think the grain market is going to have the attitude a little too cheap to sell and through here, and there's really no real fundamental reason to go sharply higher. So I hate to be a bearer of non-exciting news. It's like grind, grind, grind.
You're not the only one. It's just that way in the markets at the moment, but we'll keep up to speed on it. Hey, thanks so much for staying with us today and talking with us each week about the marketplace.
Very good. Take care.
Yep. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 16th day of November. We're a week and a day. The 24th is the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. That's coming up not too long now. And if you haven't picked up your ticket, I urge you to buy your ticket today. 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Don't wait. We don't send the tickets out, so that's not a worry getting in to you, because you'll just check in on that day. But you need to pick up that ticket. You can also do it online if you'd prefer to do it that way at farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. The Farm Assets Conference, it's one of our premier events, and if you have not gone, and there's only been one of them prior to this, so the chances are maybe that you maybe have not gone yet. So time to pick up that ticket. 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, the RFA, the Renewable Fuels Association, would like Secretary of State John Kerry to promote the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, that at the upcoming climate talks for the planet. However, RFA's letter to Kerry may be more directed at the U.S. ethanol policy rather than at foreign nations. RFA President Bob Dineen wants Kerry to stress the RFS's role in reducing U.S. greenhouse gas emissions and to encourage others to follow the U.S. biofuels example.
28 countries across the globe detailed in their submissions their use of biofuels and how they would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But the United States, which has the single most aggressive and progressive renewable fuels program, didn't mention biofuels once in their report.
The climate change conference, by the way, comes just as the EPA is set to announce its much-delayed renewable fuels volumes for 2014, 15, and the coming year, 2016, which may be volumes that take a big chunk out of the RFS. RFA's Bob Dineen points out that biofuels are poised to replace an increasing share of the world's liquid transportation fuel, close to 36 billion gallons in the United States by 2020. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., and with biofuels, but switch from corn to soybeans. The ASA, the American Soybean Association, along with biodiesel and soybean industry representatives, will meet in Washington, D.C. It's part of the National Biodiesel Board's annual membership meeting. The NBB meeting comes as the Obama administration is wrapping up its review of the final review for the RFS volume requirements for biomass-based diesel for 2015 through 2017. Congress is also turning its attention to the renewal of the expired tax extenders, including the biodiesel tax credit. ASA strongly supports renewal of the biodiesel tax credit and wants it shifted from a blender's credit to a producer's credit. The biodiesel tax credit is one of dozens of credits that expired at the end of 2014. And finally, let's go ahead and stay with biofuels, but switch to an international bent. The U.S. Grains Council and its partner organizations in ethanol export promotion traveled to India to discuss clean energy solutions and policies. During a series of meetings with ethanol producers, government officials, and oil companies, the participants were given a full picture of what's happening today in India's fuel supply and where the industry may be headed. Talks also included India's economy and political environment, as well as the government's role in driving ethanol development. The council also sent representatives from its ethanol and value-added advisory teams to the annual World Ethanol and Biofuels Conference in Europe. They met with ethanol importers from around the world. Talks included reassuring potential clients that American farmers have the potential to increase production and meet any potential future demand. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. If you bought that $30 ticket yet, this is the best bargain of the year. I guarantee it. We'll have 8 of our analysts there at the Farm Assets Conference. Plus, we'll cover big data. We'll talk about potential regulatory issues for farmers, including the ability to put anhydrous ammonia on in the fall. Did you know that might be up on the line? It could be, so you want to be prepared for that one. We'll take you through the whole process at the Farm Assets Conference. That's next Tuesday, the 24th of the month of November. It's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. And if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, don't worry about it, because we're really not going to send a ticket to you. We're just going to take your name. That's what we've done with everybody. And then you're going to check in when you come to the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center starting at about 9:30 a.m. next Tuesday morning. This is just a $30 bill. 800-898-1065 or farmassetsconference.com. If it's not on your list, it should be. It ought to be. I think it's going to be a fantastic day. In fact, I'm positive it will be a fantastic day. So get your tickets right now. 800-898-1065, farmassetsconference.com. You can buy them online if you'd like, or willag.org. However you do it, I hope to see you next week in Bloomington Normal at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center for the Farm Assets Conference. On Wednesday evening last week at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention, a pretty impressive event took place, and I'll let you hear some of that each day of this week. It had to do with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The commodity groups, including corn, wheat, soybeans, beef, along with the U.S. Grains Council and the pork producers, all gathered in support of the TPP. Here's what the administrator of the United States Department of Agriculture's Foreign Ag Service had to say about the trade agreement.
I think the central question for American agriculture right now is whether or not we're better with or without TPP. And from my perspective, the resounding answer is that we are better off with TPP. 20% of American farm income comes from exports. It supports 52 million people who live in rural America, and not just farmers, it's processors, shippers, marketers, people all along the value chain. This is a huge deal about setting the rules of the road for 40% of the globe's economy. My final thought that I want to leave before I turn it over to the people to my right is that we need to remind everybody all across the country, every small town, every rural community, that everybody has skin in this game. Every other row of soybeans goes overseas nowadays. It wasn't that way when I was a kid. One day of every week's worth of dairy production is exported. Those are meaningful opportunities for our producers. They're meaningful for global food systems. And as you're going to hear pretty soon, the Trans-Pacific Partnership makes a meaningful contribution to trade systems that work. So take it away.
That was Phil Karsten. He's the administrator of USDA's Foreign Agriculture Service. The take it away was a cue for the rest of the organization presidents or representatives for the commodity groups to make their statements in support of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Wade Cowan is the president of the American Soybean Association.
Soybean farmers, we knew were going to be very well protected in TPP. And the deal that we are looking at now will have no tariffs in all of these nations in the next 10 years. And so that's a very good outcome. But what was more important to us as an industry is not just that soybeans were protected, but that the people that we sell those soybeans and that meal and that oil to, our partners in the livestock industry, are well taken care of too. And I think that it's a great testament when all of ag can come together and work in a joint effort to lift all of us. Because so many times in today's society, you see one group versus another. We're pushing our agenda, we're not pushing. And everybody in this fight to get this TPP to the position that it is today, and we'll push for passage. And we're sure that the president will sign this, and it'll be a good thing for agriculture. And we sure do appreciate the working together. And the last thing that I would say is that not only did they do us a good job in opening these markets and tariffs, but the sanitary and phytosanitary provisions of the TPP that we look at, they're going to be based on science now. And we're not going to be subject to the whims and the whimsies of people in other countries that look at every other reason not to accept our products. And that's a good deal, and that's a good thing for agriculture. And we look forward to working with the Congress and the Senate and making sure that TPP goes through and is a boon for agriculture and a help to rural America.
John. Wade Cowan is a farmer and the president of the American Soybean Association. He made his offer of support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership at last week's National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. We'll hear from other representatives during the week. This week, you can find them already online at willag.org. Turning our attention to the cash grain market at this hour, let's discuss that with Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
I want to take up basis and the futures market. There seems to be, you know, the futures are awfully low, but basis is doing a lot of work, and that's understandable, I think, in the eastern Corn Belt, especially in the have-not areas, and we're close to one of those. However, it appears that the western Corn Belt bases aren't terribly weak, and they have a big crop. So what's the problem in the marketplace at this point, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of the places in the east, unless you're a huge multi-conglomerate elevator, you don't just aren't able to have access to the trains and get corn from Iowa, you know, into Indiana or Ohio. Now, some of the bigger companies can do that, and even there, it's a process. You have to get the freight rates established, the tariffs established, and get it to work. So it all takes time, and in the meantime, you know, you're trying to keep the place open, and so you're buying, you're taking whatever you can get to stay open. And so I think that's why we're seeing the eastern corn basis a lot better than the western corn basis. It's going to take time, and B, not everyone has access to those western bushels. So I think those two things have kept the eastern corn basis extremely strong.
And the western corn basis, is it weak, or, I mean, as weak as you would think it would be under a heavy crop?
Well, it's not as weak as it was last year. I guess farmers out there have heard about the poor crops in the east, and they see the low prices on the futures market, and they don't need the cash. And so even though they've got plenty of corn out there, some of the farmers are unwilling to sell at these low prices. And so if the corn's not moving, the basis has to get a little bit better. So the basis isn't anywhere close to what it is here in the east out west, but it still is better than where it was last year. And I think it's a combination of the low futures price and the farmers just are unwilling to sell and don't need to sell yet at this point.
And what are your bids for the day, by the way, on the spot month?
Spot month, we are 1 over March futures, which is 368. Beans are 10 under the Jan, or 849.
And do you think that you will see $4 and $9, which seem to be the magical numbers for corn and soybeans and farmers anytime soon?
I think we've got a shot at that, and it's not so much because we need to have it because of this year's crop. We've got plenty of old crop corn, about a 1.7 billion carryout, according to the government. But I still think we need to run the market up a little bit to encourage some farmers to plant more corn next year. You know, we need about 1 to 2 million acres extra corn to keep that carryout above a billion bushels, and we can do that. But at sub $4 corn, I'm not sure how much of an incentive there is to plant corn on corn. We may end up getting those acres anyway, but if we'd run the market up 20-25 cents, there's a much better chance of getting those extra acres.
Greg, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons, right here on Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Fast Food Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1620, the first corn found in the U.S. by British settlers was discovered in Provincetown, Massachusetts, by 16 desperately hungry pilgrims led by Miles Standish, William Bradford, Stephen Hopkins, and Edward Tilley at a place they named Corn Hill. The food came from a previously harvested cache belonging to a local Indian tribe. The corn provided a much-needed supply of food, which saw the pilgrims through their first winter in the New World. A commemorative plaque placed on Corn Hill quotes in part, "And sure it was God's good providence that we found this corn, for else we know not how we should have done. In 1786, the Massachusetts State Legislature awarded a grant of £200 for the completion of what are believed to be the first U.S.-made spinning, carding, and roping machines. The machines, known as the State Models, were advertised to the benefit of the infant but growing American textile machinery industry. In 1934, Carl von Linn died, a German engineer. His invention of a continuous process of liquefying gases in large quantities formed the basis for the modern technology of refrigeration. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Mark Russo from Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois, is now on the line to take up the agricultural weather forecast. There's one primary event across the whole of the planet, and it appears to, even though it's already really strong, to be strengthening. Can you tell me about the El Nino this year and how it compares to previous El Ninos?
Well, certainly, Todd, and thanks for the invite here. As far as El Nino, it continues to be at some of the strongest levels we've seen of El Nino events, and this goes back over the past 50 years or even longer than that. Overall, the three strongest El Ninos over the past 100 years, we're talking about 1982-83, 97-98, and this year is ranking right up in that territory here. And that deals with sea surface temperatures across much of the central and eastern Pacific Ocean. And so we're seeing very warm sea surface temperatures, highly anomalous, and that's what's resulting in this very strong El Nino event. Overall, we've seen now the global atmospheric base day turn El Nino. So some of your traditional El Nino impacts, such as overall a higher frequency of rainfall and precip across areas of the U.S., southern Brazil and Argentina, that's played out to some extent here. Also, we saw disruptions of the Indian monsoon and at times here, Southeast Asian monsoon, Indonesia, Malaysia, and some dryness across portions of Australia. Now, again, every El Nino has specific impacts, a little different flavors of El Nino, but the general impact has been pretty similar with some of your stronger El Nino events historically.
What are the primary things that happen in Brazil and Argentina, or those primary growing regions for corn and soybeans in South America?
Well, the main impact is actually a reduction of dryness in areas of Argentina and southern Brazil, and the most likely situation is for near normal or even above normal precip. So as we go throughout the remainder of the growing season, at least based on this El Nino event here, that reduces the risk of any kind of significant dryness evolving over the next several months. If you look up north in the areas of kind of central Brazil into that Mato Grosso area, there is a slight drier bias, but their normal rainfall totals at this time of year are so high, even a slight deficit is not going to cause any kind of dryness of any kind of significant crop problems there. So bottom line is that with a strong El Nino event, it overall reduces the risk of any kind of real dryness of stressful weather in portions of South America.
Thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us this week, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, and joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can hear him again on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can also purchase tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's at farmassetsconference.com as well, or at 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. They're just $30.